What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 219. Another case of history here. Something we love doing every year. Baseball season is over, yes, but the MLB Hall of Fame ballot is out. Last year, we went through pretty much everybody and talked for a long time. Probably won't be as long, but I got my 10 guys and a couple other notes on some other guys. I just love doing it. And, of course, football. We haven't done awards in a while, so we'll talk about most of the top teams today.
Yeah, the power rankings that we do biweekly will be this episode. NFL awards, like Skyler said, and then, of course, our MLB Hall of Fame vote. It's always fun to do and a bit, let's say, off schedule for us usually. It's not like typically something that we do, but it's always fun when we do get around to doing it. For the opener, though, best thing that we saw this past week, I guess I'll get right into mine. It's Saquon Barkley and just how fun he is to watch. It definitely helps that I'm a fantasy owner of his, but even if I wasn't, just to watch him, a talent like that with a good O-line and a good offensive scheme for the first time in his career, is awesome. When we watched him with the Giants, Saquon would occasionally break off the crazy big run. But it was really just like all him every single time. If you look at the advanced stats, his offensive line didn't give him like any yardage prior. It was all the stuff that he was creating. Now he's got, you know, the ability to create as well as anyone, as good as anybody in the league, with an offensive line that gets him about as much yards as you can for, you know, a run blocking offensive line. It's just great to see for Saquon, someone who's been going through it with the Giants for many years, finally got out of there. Didn't move too far, but it's helping him a ton this year.
Yeah, it really feels like a perfect fit. Crazy rushing attack from Philly, and we'll be talking about him pretty soon here. I have an interesting opener. It's something that doesn't involve any games that were played. How about the legendary pregame show inside the NBA, returning for one more season with Ernie, Kenny, Shaq, and Chuck, who actually won't be retiring, but on ESPN. ESPN gets the show despite being shot down and shot in the TNT studio one more time because they made a trade. TNT was able to secure ESPN's entire Big 12 schedule for next season. This is massive for TNT. It's a more obtainable channel than like a ESPNU or a CBS Sportsnet. So I think it's a win-win situation. It keeps growing college sports, and we get to see what happens with inside the NBA because there are lots of rumors they're going to get bought out by NBC in 2026 and have like a Sunday Night Football, but for basketball over there. So that's going to be my opener. Just really enjoy the history of sports, all sorts of history, even sports media. And this definitely falls in that category.
Yeah. Something big did happen for your team though today. I know this is something that I'm happy that you put on the spreadsheet because I didn't want to get us talking about it. Joe Douglas, GM for the New York Jets, did end up getting fired this morning. I don't know if that was officially what they called it. Usually it's like decided to go in separate directions or something stupid like that. But point is, he's not there anymore. And I don't know if you feel this exact same way, but I don't know if this is 100% the right decision.
Yeah, I didn't come into this with a big monologue like the Robert Saleh one, but I kind of got tipped off that this was going to happen a couple weeks ago. His realtor accidentally put something out that he had sold his house and bought property in Baltimore where he used to work for the Ravens. So I was like, ah, shit, he's out of here at the bye week, isn't he? And that's exactly what happened. It's tough, you know, because he made a lot of great moves. He was kind of a trade savant for us, getting good draft picks, second and third rounders for guys we didn't need anymore. The problem was, though, it's kind of a butterfly effect from his first ever draft pick, Mekhi Becton. He gets hurt, and basically everything that happens after changes everything. You know, maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hurt on Monday Night Football. Maybe we don't have to draft Olufashinu, even though he looks like he's going to be a great player. He had his first start at left tackle. He's completely fine, but you can't take Brock Bowers if you have a massive need at tackle. And I'm sure you guys are ecstatic about him falling there, but just a lot of things happened at the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's going to get blamed. But, you know, I think he probably doesn't come back either way. So I'm not as upset about it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a scapegoat situation for me. And even though there isn't really anyone to blame anymore for this situation, maybe I guess you could say like Aaron Rodgers or something like that for some of the influence that he's had. But Drew Douglas has made like a lot of really good picks over the past like 4 to 5 years, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Just like 1 through 11 or 1 through 24, however many total guys are on defense for the Jets, it feels like they can all come out and play. Maybe that's a scheme thing. Maybe that's something solid and good. And utilizing his players well, but it definitely seemed like Joe Douglas was pretty good at getting the right talent to that defensive side of the ball. And on the offensive side of the ball, maybe a bit more struggle with the O-line, like you said, with Mekhi Becton and some of the other pieces that he brought in through free agency. But, I mean, you got the playmakers. Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall are both two studs. We know Braylon Allen's obviously got a ton of potential as well, too. It just doesn't really seem like it's Joe Douglas's fault, but a reset at this point is definitely not the worst decision for the Jets. And I think rumor, that's kind of the direction that it's happening.
I agree. The rumor is that Woody Johnson is going to ask Aaron Rodgers to retire and they're going to try to blow it up. There's a lot of pieces I really like on this team. So I hope they don't go too crazy. Sometimes it just takes a couple moves, but maybe that means taking a Jalen Milroe at 7 and having him sit, which would be weird, but it's better than not having a quarterback, I guess.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. Obviously still quite a ways away from the NFL draft, but it's something that's perpetually on our mind with how much of an impact it has in changing teams around and whatnot. Before we get to our player, defensive player, and rookie of the week, though, I do want to quickly go over some of the offseason moves that we've seen in the past week in the MLB. Similar to what we did last year, there wasn't a ton of moves, I'd say, outside of today. And today was an interesting day because it's the deadline for when you have to add people to your 40-man roster before you get the Rule 5 draft pick, like pool. The Rule 5 draft doesn't take place, I believe, until mid-December. But you kind of have to have everything set now so teams know who's going to be available and who's not going to be available when it comes down to that. So there's a weird service time, minor league service time thing that you have to manipulate in order to, like, be eligible for the Rule 5 draft as well, too. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'll just tell you some of the key names of guys who were added and guys who were not added to the rosters or designated for assignment, because we got some of those today as well, too. From Washington, we saw Robert Hassel III be added to the 40-man, which is big. He was a guy that they got back in the Juan Soto deal a few years ago, has been probably one of the lesser impactful prospects for them, even though he was probably the biggest name at the time of the trade. Still a guy, ton of potential, outfielder, left-handed hitting, 23 years old, still pretty good player regardless. For the Cardinals, we had a couple big ones. Tekoa Roby, who they got back in the Jordan Montgomery trade a few years ago, was added to the 40-man, as well as Tink Hentz, who has been one of their bigger prospects of the last few years. Both pitchers and both presumably going to be starters for that Cardinals rotation in the coming years. For the, let's see, I'm trying to find where I exactly had my next one. Oh, big one that we had, George Valera, a guy who's been a top prospect for a long time, actually got designated for assignment today. So he's out, 24 years old, left-handed hitting outfielder, used to be, premier prospect, probably top 20 prospect in, pipelines rankings 2-3 years ago. Battled a ton of injuries, now finds himself being designated for assignment. I don't know if that's injury related or it's just they gave up on him completely, but likely will not be with the Guardians next year. Another big name who got designated for assignment, failed prospect as well too, is Brennan Davis, now 25 years old. Brennan Davis has kind of been in the lull for a few years now where it's just like, okay, you're going to make the jump to the big leagues, or are you not? And apparently he has not made the jump to the big leagues as they go ahead and designate him for an assignment. The outfield, though, is crowded because they did also add Owen Cassie to the 40-man roster in the Chicago system. I mean, Cubs got a ton of big league players, so I'm curious to see how that fits. Big one as well, too, on the other side of Chicago was Colson Montgomery, got added to the 40-man roster. He's 23 years old now, well-known, partially because of MLB The Show, but is a top prospect in the league and hopefully will be the White Sox opening day starting shortstop next year. I doubt it will be because of service time manipulation, but what we've seen with Paul Skenes sometimes that can hurt you if you don't, you know, call them up right away, and they're going to be a really good player. And then three guys added for the A's roster that I think is pretty interesting. Ryan Cusick, who we got in the Matt Olson deal, I want to say. Gunnar Hoglund, who we got in the Matt Chapman deal. And then Denzel Clark, who played on the Canadian national team during the World Baseball Classic. And has been a pretty exciting outfielder for us in the minor league system. They all got added to the 40-man roster, so you can expect to see them in Sacramento next year.
All right.
It's weird looking at the on Fangraphs where I'm looking at all this stuff. It has abbreviations, and I'm used to seeing Oak, and now it's ATH, which is unfortunate. But besides that, we'll get into our player, defensive player, and rookie of the week now. Skyler, who was your player of the week?
We had an offensive explosion this week, finally, and there's a lot of great choices. But because of this, I feel like I have to adjust for inflation. So sorry, Jared Goff and Saquon Barkley. It's not your fault. I expected you to do this. So I'm going to go with co-winners still because it's so hard to separate them. Taysom Hill and Bo Nix. Taysom played about seven different positions and scored three times for the Saints. And then, of course, there's Bo Nix demolishing Raheem Morris's defense with four touchdowns and no turnovers.
Yeah, I wanted to put Taysom Hill here, but then I also saw that he threw a pick and had a fumble. So what a crazy day that he had. Like, he scored three touchdowns on the ground, had eight catches, threw a pass, completed a pass to the other team, lost a fumble, returned a kick, not for a touchdown, but still returned it. It's just, he's like the Travis Hunter of like everything right now. It's kind of crazy to see how he does. Obviously not as good as Travis Hunter in most aspects, but it seems like Taysom has a game like this every year where he, you know, has a crazy stat line. I decided to go with Jared Goff though as my player of the week. So I did give it to him. 24 for 29, 412 yards and four touchdowns. This is a Jared Goff that we expect now at this point, especially in that Detroit Lions offense. I know some of that was Rack and Jameson Williams had a really long touchdown, and you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, purely his performance that led him to the stat line, but he still was really good last week. And I know it was against the Jags, but I definitely still think it was deserved to be noticed. Defensive player of the week.
Cam Kitchens is going to get a second one for me. The Rams rookie safety picked off Drake May to seal another game and forced a fumble before that. He's really played himself into that defensive rookie of the year watch. We'll get into that a little later in the show, but it feels like we thought maybe there were two at best. Now there's some good guys in the secondary making a case. Cam Kitchens is one of them.
Yeah, I'm also going with the 99th pick in the 2024 NFL draft for this one. Cam Kitchens, who's been really good for the Rams, like you said, with the fumble and an interception this past week against New England in a rematch at Super Bowl 53.
That's right.
I want to say terrible Super Bowl, very forgettable Super Bowl. That's why it doesn't come to our heads immediately, but still, nonetheless, a Super Bowl matchup. For the Rookie of the Week, though, Skyler, who'd you choose here?
Again, I had to go with co-winners because it was equally unstoppable work from Bo Nix and Brock Bowers. Bo Nix, we know his only kryptonite is Michael Penix Jr. He should have started in that game. That's the only way they would have beat the Broncos. And, of course, Brock Bowers. 13 catches, that's a rookie record for tight ends. Just unbelievable this season. He's by far the best tight end. Receiving wise this season, he's what, over 200 yards above Travis Kelce. Unbelievable. It's got to be happy to have a blue chipper to watch every week to get you through the week, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't choose Brock Bowers for my rookie of the week, but I will talk about him for a bit here. He's just like, he's really good. And it's just like, it's clear that he's really good. Like there is no, oh, maybe he's not. Maybe it's just like, you know, inflation for being the only guy, you know, or something like that. But he just, what he does week in, week out, and just kind of his like whole package as a tight end is really fun to watch. And it's definitely going to be something that, obviously, I mean, you don't really have a choice if you're getting drafted to a team, but like if you're Shadur or you're Cam Ward or, you know, Milroe, whoever it is, Carson Beck, I hope not. But like if you're a QB looking as the Raiders as a team that's going to draft you, I think that's the guy that you're circling right now and saying, hey, damn, I get to play with Brock Bowers for the next, you know, hopefully 10 to 15 years. It's pretty cool to see. And for him to be so young, also has the same birthday as me, exactly 1 year younger than me. Wow. It's pretty cool to see. But my rookie of the week, though, is going to be Bo Nix, a guy that I hated on a ton early in the year. But last week I kind of gave him his flowers, and this week I'm going to give him his flowers as well, too. 28 for 33, 307, four touchdowns. Just dominant against the Falcons. I don't think anyone expected that game to go exactly the way it did, where they just completely blew the Falcons out of the water. But the Broncos look like a good team. And that's partially and mainly due to how good Bo Nix has been, especially in the last 6 to 7 weeks now at this point. So moving on to our MLB Hall of Fame vote. Obviously, the ballot's a little bit weird. You get 10 years on it, and you have to get a certain amount of votes to order to be able to return to the ballot for the next year. So I'll quickly go over the returning guys, and then I'll go over the first-year guys as well, too. Starting off with Billy Wagner, who's in his 10th year of voting, Manny Ramirez, Andrew Jones, Omar Vizquel, Andy Pettit, Bobby Abreu, Mark Burley, Corey Hunter, Alex Rodriguez, Jimmy Rollins, Carlos Beltran, K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez, Chase Utley, and David Wright. And then we have a whole bunch of first ballot guys, or first time on the ballot guys, starting off with CC Sabathia, Ichiro Suzuki, Ian Kinsler, Dustin Pedroia, Felix the King Hernandez, Curtis Granderson, Troy Tulowitzki, Ben Zobrist, Russell Martin, Hanley Ramirez, Adam Jones, Brian McCann, Carlos Gonzalez, that's a fun one, and Fernando Rodney.
What a list.
So I have 8 guys that I voted for. So I guess I can say my 8. And then if you have any differences or you know, want to make a piece about a guy as well too, I think you can chime in there. Or just as we go one by one. I'll start it off with Billy Wagner, though. I do think he ends up getting in on his 10th year on the ballot last year. He had 73.8% of the ballots last year. I believe he just needed 4 or 5 more votes to get in, to get to that 75% threshold. I think he does get that this year. And just based off of the natural progression of votes, he seems like he will get there this year.
Yeah, 100% with you. I have in my notes, based off the history, he should be fine. He needs about 5 votes. He's one of the best lefties in MLB history, and he's got a great story.
Next one that I have, I don't think he ends up getting in, 9th year on the ballot, is Manny Ramirez. I did vote for him, but 32.5% of the votes last year is not, you know, the best spot for him to be in. Obviously, if he gets in, then I think a whole bunch of other people that haven't gotten in need to get in as well, too. But he's still a guy that I would vote for.
I have Manny just off. It's actually the first guy not on that I had notes for, because he obviously had Hall of Fame numbers. But the problem is he was a shit starter and he wasn't quite as good as A-Rod.
Yeah. Next one that I have is Andrew Jones, 8th year on the ballot at 61.6% of votes. So it's going to be close for him. Probably won't make it this year, but I think next year is probably treading the best way for him. Just one of the best defensive players of all time that we've ever seen, has hit 400 home runs as well too. And had, you know, a bit of speed to go with it as well. He's a unique player. And I definitely think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown.
Yeah, Andrew Jones also on my ballot. This is one of the few examples where I think people are thinking too hard about the analytics, because to hit over 400 homers while playing platinum glove defense in center hasn't really happened since, I don't know, Willie Mays. It seems like it's taken a little longer than it should.
Yeah. Next one that I have, I did skip a few people on here, is the 4th-year guy who had 34.8% of votes last year. It's Alex Rodriguez. Will he get in? I don't know. His numbers are kind of interesting as far as like percentage goes for steroid users, because he was like, besides Barry Bonds, probably the, you know, most well-known big-time steroid user guy. But I like A-Rod. I really enjoyed watching him play, and obviously, you know, 696 homers kind of warrants being in that Hall of Fame discussion.
Yes. I did put A-Rod on my ballot again this year. He got popped twice for PEDs, but I'm a believer in, it's not just about the character, but can we tell the story of baseball without him? I don't think you can. I know in years past we've said, well, if Bonds doesn't get in, then why are we going to waste our time with A-Rod? Which is valid. But I still think he was the second best player of the steroid era, hitter-wise, right? He's not Roger Clemens, but it's not like he's Pete Rose. He didn't rip off the league. This was encouraged by the commissioner. So that's why it's like, I know people don't like him, but I feel like if you have the opportunity to put in a player that was this great, you should keep voting for him.
Yeah. Next one that I have is Carlos Beltran. Obviously, you know, one of the most great talents that we've seen within the MLB within the last 20 to 30 years. Switch hitting, five tool outfielder, is just such a unique type of player in MLB history. Had 435 career home runs to go with 312 stolen bases. He had 57.1% of the votes in his third year, or his second year on the ballot last year. This will be his third year, I assume. So I think you probably should get in. And I voted for him.
I did leave him off. I chose two other outfielders instead that we'll get to eventually. Again, a possible first ballot guy before the Astros stuff. He was the alleged leader of the Astros cheating scandal. It's dropped the number of his supporters. So, you know, he's got a lot of time. And I feel like I can spread my votes around up until he gets to year 7, 8, 9.
Now, that was the last reoccurring guy that I have. The rest of my three votes were all first-timers. So do you have any guys returning on the ballot that you want to talk about?
Yeah, Chase Utley. We talked about him a lot last season. I was kind of worried about how people felt about the end of his career becoming a villain, but I've had a lot of time to think about it since our last episode. He was a postseason legend when Howard and Rollins hit cold streaks in the playoffs, and he was the only one who didn't get the MVP out of the trio, but you can't beat that consistency. Another guy had Bobby Abreu. He doesn't scream Hall of Famer sitting next to some of these other guys, but it's kind of the definition of the guy who will get in at the end, right? He was really efficient for 18 seasons, basically hitting second every single game until he was 40, 128 OPS. Here's the one I liked. He hit over 300 seven times, and he stole 400 bags. And then the last one, right? My last spot usually goes to a first-year pitcher, maybe try to keep someone on the ballot. But F it, I'm taking Torii Hunter because I cannot believe he's only gotten 7% after 4 years. I watched him terrorize the American League for like 20 seasons. I think the main reason he hasn't gotten love is because he wasn't a power hitter. But he still won 9 gold gloves and hit about 25 homers a season. So I'm going to throw him a vote before we get to the 1 year guys or the first year.
Yeah. So as we get to the first year guys, I'll start it off with, I think, the only guy that has a chance to be a first balloter. And that's Ichiro Suzuki. Obviously he's in a weird spot because everybody knows that he, you know, played in Japan for a long time before he went to the MLB, came to the MLB and was really good. Still got to 3,000 hits. Obviously, he doesn't have like the WAR numbers that most Hall of Famers do, but what he did in his career didn't really warrant WAR. That's not really how he was good. He was really defensive, really good leadoff hitter, and obviously he doesn't have like a signature playoff moment or anything like that. Just playing in Seattle for so long and not making the playoffs for the majority of his career is pretty interesting. But I think you can't, especially the 2000 story of baseball, you can't tell the story of it without Ichiro Suzuki. And just like, that's, everybody emulated him when we were kids, you know, that's just who what you did. He was so unique and so fun to watch. And I definitely think he deserves to probably be the only first ballot guy this year.
Yeah. He has the longevity with the counting stats. He's got the MVP. He was one of the most exciting players to watch of our lifetime. It's a no brainer. It's just a reminder to how old we are that we've seen most of these guys' prime. Like my sports memory, at least for baseball, probably goes back around 07, 08. That's when I was like, I got to know every single player and what they're up to. And we got to see some really good Ichiro seasons.
Yeah. The next guy that I have, I don't think he gets in this year, but I do think he gets pretty close, is CC Sabathia. He has the highest WAR of any of the first ballot guys. He was just good for such a long time and obviously had that really good back end of the season with the Milwaukee Brewers where he was just like had one of the best like 3 month stretches that we've ever seen from a pitcher, especially in the 2000s. The longevity, he got a World Series, I want to say. Did he get a World Series? Yeah, he got with 09 and the Yankees. So he did get there. I think that matters a ton as well, too. I definitely do think CC deserves to get in. Maybe not this year, but I do think he probably warrants like 60 to 70% of the votes.
Yeah, it's another no-brainer for me. Vallejo, California, baby. Shout out DJ. He's got the crazy prime with the Cy Young with Cleveland. The legacy being one of the best rentals in baseball history, almost winning the MVP off of about 2 months of pitching. And obviously the postseason success with New York. He's got the ALCS MVP, 3,000 strikeouts. Awesome career.
Yeah. The last guy that I have voted for is Dustin Pedroia. And this is an interesting one because his WAR numbers aren't that high. He didn't hit a ton of homers, only had 140, but he was just like the definition of like a ball player. And I think that's the guy that deserves to be in the MLB Hall of Fame. Only 5'9", 170 pounds. Like, he's not the biggest guy, but the like Dustin Pedroia lore is crazy. And like just how much of a ball player he was. I forget exactly where I heard the story. It's probably on like, it might not be a Barstool, but I remember hearing his college recruiting story and how I think it was the Arizona State coach that saw him, just saw he was the best player he's ever seen or something like that. And even as a, you know, 5'6" or 5'7" guy, when he was, you know, a junior in high school or whatever it was, he's got the MVP. He's got the Rookie of the Year. He's got All-Star awards. He's got multiple World Series. He's got Gold Gloves. He's got Silver Sluggers. Everything that you can accomplish as an MLB player, he's done. And I think that means a ton in the grand scheme of things. And that's why I think he deserves to get in. Will he get in this year? God, no. But I think, I really hope once we get to year 8, year 9, that he's already in, because I don't want that to be stressful for him.
Yeah, Dustin Pedroia on my ballot. One of my favorite players of all time. And I like the way you put it. It's another guy you kind of have to adjust for inflation. He put up insane numbers for a small guy. Guys don't play 20 years anymore. That's just not how the game works, especially pitchers. But he went hard every single play. It's something we don't see in today's game as well. Unfortunately, he lost his legs when he hit 30 and started dealing with major injuries. You know, the OPS plus isn't going to be comparable to a guy like Bobby Abreu, but neither is anyone else on here. I think the MVP season is enough for me to get a vote over David Wright or Ian Kinsler. And I do have one more that I picked too.
Yeah, go ahead and say that last one, because I have a few guys I didn't vote for that I do want to talk about.
So yeah, I voted for King Felix, another guy who didn't have a crazy long career, but at some point, the voters are going to have to change their standards, because he had one of the most dominant 6-year stretches since 2000, two ERA titles, and he has a much better case than Mark Burley. I'm sorry, Foolish Baseball. I know that's your guy. And, you know, I understand Andy Pettit had more awards in his career, but because of the uncertainty of the steroid era, I think we got to move along and let's keep this guy alive. Let's get him the 5% and see what happens with King Felix after that.
Yeah, I did want to talk about King Felix. That was one of the guys I didn't want to talk about. And maybe it was just us being A's fans and growing up before I really got like super into baseball. But like I'd say maybe like 07 to 2010 before I like really, really got into it. I just remember every single opening day going to the Coliseum and watching King Felix shut us out. Yeah. Every single opening day, I swear he probably did it 5 or 6 times against us. And it just was something I came accustomed to. And I just thought he was the best pitcher in the league. I thought he was the best. And I mean, you don't get the nickname the King for something that means that you aren't the best. He was dominant. He just got old really quickly. Once he hit 30, things kind of fizzled out. Didn't play past age 33. But a full career in Seattle. Going to get number retired if he doesn't have that already. Like he's got a really cool career. And I wish he was someone that could be, you know, a Hall of Famer, but I just don't think he does get in. And then the last guy, the definition of like swagger during our day was Troy Tulowitzki, and just like how much fun he was to watch play. When you look at, I really like Baseball References thing when they like, or the spreadsheet that they have when you look up the 2025 Hall of Fame ballot, is they have a WAR 7 category, and it categorizes this player's best 7-season stretch or the best 7 seasons. And it says like where that kind of ranks within the other guys. And out of the first year guys on the ballot, Troy Tulowitzki has the 3rd best 7-season stretch. Pedroia is number 2 and Ichiro's number 1. So that just tells you like how good Tulo was for his, you know, short stint in the MLB. And I think that was 2010 to 2015 or maybe 09 to 15. He was like the best shortstop in baseball, and it really wasn't even close for that time period. He was fun to watch. Surprised he didn't get an MVP. It only came to number five on that, but Gold Glover, Silver Slugger, he was just like cool, you know. And for kids growing up, I think it's easy to identify with like a shortstop or something like that. He was that shortstop for me when I was growing up. That I was like, damn, this guy is a really cool ball player.
Yeah, I think the difference is probably when he came back from the injuries. When he left Colorado, he couldn't run anymore. He couldn't play shortstop, and it's kind of a sour taste in everyone's mouth. Even though that Jaws 7 or whatever it is going to be super high, because he was nasty.
Yeah. After he turned 30, just didn't really go that way for him. But with those Colorado years in those vest uniforms, those were something. And I guess maybe Carlos Gonzalez, he's not going to get in, but definitely one of those cool swagger players. Yeah. Played for the A's as well, too, which is pretty cool. He's not going to get in, but definitely, you know, sweetest. If there was a Hall of Fame for the sweetest swings, he would get in first ballot, no doubt. Yeah. That thing was a beauty. But moving on from
next
that,
year, next year, before we move on, I wanted to mention Cole Hamels, who I think is a guy who might stick around 10 years. So we'll see, because he was kind of a postseason legend, too, at the end of his career. Ryan Braun won't, but it'll be cool to have that conversation. Same with Edwin Encarnacion, some really clutch postseason plays. And someone to keep an eye on, Alex Gordon. The defensive metrics usually translate no matter what era you're in. So he's a guy who may get a little higher than we expect, like a Chase Utley this year.
Yeah. We'll move on from there, though, and we'll get into our top 15 power rankings that we usually do a bit earlier in the show. But that Hall of Fame vote does, you know, occupy a bit of our time. So we'll get into this. Starting off with the teams that did not make the list that you want to talk about or on the list last time.
Yeah, the Rams and the Niners are getting knocked out. Just hasn't been good enough on offense. Again, it's not necessarily the quarterback's fault. Stafford and Purdy have been fine this season. They just, you know, when the machine's not running like it used to, you're going to get a little overwhelmed. And that's what's happening. They've fallen back to 500.
Yeah, I have two teams that did fall off on my list. The first of which is going to be the Atlanta Falcons, who I had at number 11 last time. They have two losses in games I think they should have won against the Saints and the Broncos. Losing by 32 points to the Broncos is just straight up ridiculous. So I think they definitely have to get off the list for me. A team that I really liked going into the season, which is unfortunate. Next up is the Rams. They're 5-5. They're definitely still in, you know, the NFC West conversation. They're only, you know, game out or whatever it is. But the past two games haven't really been super impressive for me. That Sunday night loss or Monday night loss against the Dolphins 2 weeks ago was pretty tough. And then beating the Patriots the way that they did, I thought that should have been a bit of a, not as close of a game to say that. And I don't think they're, you know, definitely not out of it, like I just said, but not as good as what they, I think, need to be in order to be get to where they want to.
Right.
What about the number 15 team that you have?
Yeah, I kept the Falcons on there. I also had them 11. I'm going to drop them down to 15 because they're still two games up on Tampa. The Saints game was just disgusting to watch two weeks ago. They lost by a field goal, and they're definitely not playing well, but no one else has really stepped up. So I'm going to keep them in the top 15 for now.
Yeah. Number 15 for me is going to be a complete shock because it's a 4-7 team and they actually move up in the rankings because they were unranked last time. I did put the Cincinnati Bengals on here because I still think they're better than a lot of these teams that have better records than them, even though, you know, the record doesn't say so, of course. But if you're on your schedule, say you're the, you know, the Cardinals or some random team like the Ravens, or not the Ravens because they're in the same division, but say you're the Commanders or something. And you're looking at your schedule, would you rather see a 4-7 Cincinnati team or a 6-5 Broncos team? Like I would definitely be more hesitant against that Bengals team, especially with the way how Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase have been. Like that duo right now is the best in the league. Obviously the defense for Cincinnati isn't that good and the special teams costing them games as well too. But I still think they're a good squad. It's not going to work out this year. This will probably be the last time on the rankings, but I did want to give a shout out to them because I do think even with losing games to the Chargers and the Ravens, that still is a tough team to beat no matter, you know, what the record shows. Number 14.
I had a very similar strategy. I'm going to go with a 4-6 team here in the rankings for the first time all year. That's the 4-6 Miami Dolphins. This is my big hunch team to add them. I'm going to try to get them 2 weeks early instead of 2 weeks late because they look much better with Tua back. They still haven't played the Jets yet, so that's a massive head start over a team like Cincinnati. That's basically two pre-wins, especially if Rodgers decides not to play anymore. And that's basically it. I have a hunch that we're going to get wrecked by Miami again.
My number 14 team, they did not move, I believe for the second straight time, is going to be the San Francisco 49ers. They're 5-5. Interesting couple of weeks. They win against the Buccaneers in a close game, and then they lose to Geno and the Seahawks on Sunday in another divisional game that they seem to lose when they had the lead. And, I mean, you could easily make a case for this team not deserving to be in the top 15. But it's just, like, it's holding on to me still. Like, I feel like if I don't, then they're just going to go on a run. Yeah. I think I definitely do need to, you know, leave them on the list. Whether, you know, it is a number 14 spot or not. So, they do stay on the list as the number 14th team of my power rankings. Number 13.
I'm going to give the 13th spot to the Broncos. They were unranked. They're 6-5. But Bo Nix has been excellent these past couple of weeks. They should have beat Kansas City, and they took their anger out on Atlanta, 38-6. I don't know if we can trust them to go on a run, but they have a much better resume now.
Maybe Denver wasn't the best example to use in the case of Cincinnati, because I do have them above them at number 13. This is the second unranked team that I have on here. What they did against the Falcons was pretty remarkable to just – blow them out of the water is pretty big. And then they lose to the Chiefs the week before that, but obviously that was a game that they, you know, should have had. If they just made a field goal from whatever is like 35 yards or something like that. This ranking partially has to do with how good Bo Nix has been. And I do see a lot of similarities between them and the Chargers in the way that they, like, rely on their defense. They play ball control football on offense. You might not see a ton of, like, huge, massive plays, but they want to hold on to the football. They want to take time of possession and let their defense win their games for them. And I think that's what they've done pretty well, especially in the, you know, the second half of the season. I know they had a big loss to the Ravens a few weeks ago, but besides that, they've been good for a team that I expected to be really bad this year. Number 12.
At number 12, I have the Houston Texans, 7-4. They get the -2, though, because even though they lost by 3 to Detroit, that game pretty much sums up their season so far. It was a disaster. Stroud looks so off that even getting 5 takeaways on the defense isn't enough to win a game. And maybe Nico Collins coming back, we'll have him back up in the top 5 in a few weeks here. But right now it's hard to separate them from a team like Minnesota, who keeps winning no matter what the issue is.
Number 12 for me, moving up 3 spots, is going to be where I slot the Los Angeles Chargers. 7-3, they obviously have a good spot there as far as postseason positioning. But these next couple of games are games I do really want to see. Monday Night Football against the Ravens this week, and then in 2 weeks after that, they play the Chiefs in Kansas City on Sunday night, which will be a fun one. I think you look at their last 4 or 5 games that they've won, the Bengals, Titans, Browns, Saints, and Broncos are the games that they've won. And you're all just like, those teams are, you know, probably not the best teams. They don't have that quality win yet, in my opinion. And I think if they beat the Ravens, they'll jump out of that 12 spot into, you know, a top 7, top 6 type team. Number 11.
At 11, I got the Arizona Cardinals, 6-4. They're moving up 4 spots from 15 because they demolished the Jets and got to celebrate it on their bye week right after. So they're riding pretty high, 4-game win streak. Things are going very well for the Cardinals.
Number 11, I also have the Arizona Cardinals. They move up only 1 spot for me. Now in a stretch of 4 games that they've, you know, won all pretty well. I know they beat the Chargers, beat the Dolphins when they – no, they did have 2 in that one. Beat the Bears handily, and then beat the Jets pretty handily as well, too. Kyler celebrated by going to New York, watching UFC, eating some pizza. I don't know if you saw the video on his, yeah. I think it's like his TikTok, where he's like eating pizza, and the guy next to him has no clue who he is. Pretty funny video, but they're playing good football right now. They're first in the NFC West. I don't think anybody saw that going into the season. They still have a ton of divisional games left. They have 2 against the Seahawks and one against the Rams and one against the Niners to end out the season. But besides that, their schedule does not look super crazy. These next 3 weeks, so Seahawks, Vikings, Seahawks are going to be big. So we'll see how that goes for them. Number 10.
At number 10, I got the Packers at 7-3. They're going to drop down one spot because I don't know how much I can trust them. They beat Arizona pretty handedly, so they should be above them. And they played Detroit tough, but there's some trap games coming up. San Francisco, Miami, that could impact the wild card race. I don't want to put them too high.
No. Number 10, I have the Houston Texans. They do not move for me. They stay in the same spot they were for me last week. Went over the Texans went over the Cowboys last night. It was good, but I mean, everybody expected it to kind of go that way with Cooper Rush starting. The game against the Lions kind of kills me because I know the Lions are, you know, debatably the best team in football. We'll get to that in, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. But you forced Jared Goff to throw 5 interceptions and you lost that game. Like, that makes me not trust you as much in big-time scenarios where if you have all these things go your way, like, you got to win that football game. The Lions practically handed it to you, and you just gave it right back to them. So I think that's pretty unacceptable by them. I know it's a 3-point loss to one of the best teams in football, but considering the circumstances of that game, they should have won, and they found a way to lose. So they stay in the same spot. They didn't move up at all. Number 9.
At number 9, I got the Commanders, 7-4. They're dropping down, though, 3 spots from 6 after the 2 heartbreaking losses in a row to the Pennsylvania teams. Luckily for them, they have a couple tune-up games coming up. They play Cooper Rush and then Will Levis. This will hopefully get Dan Quinn's defense back moving a little quicker. Bobby Wagner's not as quick as we remember, that's for sure. But I like Frankie Louvu leading the defense.
Yeah, he's good. Number 9 for me is the same team I had in the number 9 slot. Last time it's the Green Bay Packers sitting at 7-3. Their victory against the Bears, Jordan Love seemed better than what he's seen previous weeks as far as turning over the football and stuff like that, especially against a pretty good defense with the Bears. We're going to see a lot of the Packers over the next 3 weeks, or the next 4 or 5 weeks actually, because they play the game of the week against the Niners, 125 is the next game. They play Thursday on Thanksgiving, of course. The next week they play in Detroit on Thursday Night Football, which will be fun. The week after that they play on Sunday Night Football, and then the week after that they play on Monday Night Football. So we're going to see a ton of them over the next 5 games, and I think it's going to be a big tell because I think everybody's still trying to figure out if this Packers team is, you know, a legitimate contender in the NFC or not. Number 8.
At 8, I got the Vikings, 8-2, dropping down from 7. They keep winning. So I can't drop them more than one spot right now, but the offense just has not been as good. This is the 4th week in a row they've been bailed out by Brian Flores. Even Justin Jefferson hasn't been able to get going. But they're 8-2, so you're sticking in the top 10 for now.
Yeah. I also have the Vikings as the number 8 team. They don't move at all for me. These last 3 games especially have been pretty puzzling for the offense. 21 points against a Colts team that's not that good, 12 points against the Jags team that we know their defense is not that good, and then 23 points against the Titans team that is pretty good on defense at least. But I mean, they had the football for the good majority of that game, so it wasn't super impressive there. The rest of their schedule I don't think is anything crazy as well too. They put the Lions last week of the season, but we don't see a ton of like out of divisional games that are like fun to watch for them, in my opinion. I mean we see them play the Cardinals in 2 weeks, but I don't know, I just don't think there's a ton of big tests for this Vikings team, and so I think they should probably get to, you know, the 5 seed pretty easily, in my opinion here.
Them versus Atlanta would be interesting.
Yeah, they play them in a couple of weeks, so we'll see how that goes. But moving on to number 7.
At number 7, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, maybe if the Chargers go on a run, they could get up to 7, because I did do it. I'm going to grade them on a curve here. And how I know that things are changing for the Chargers was that they didn't lose that game to Cincinnati. They've lost that game for 20 straight years. I know you know that because you see them all the time. You can already see the Harbaugh impact 10 games in. And I kept them up here, or I guess thrown them up here, because they control their own destiny. They have that big game against Baltimore, so I bumped them over the NFC teams, because if they win, then they do belong here. We just don't really know. They haven't played anyone.
Washington is my number seven team. They moved down one spot after back-to-back losses to two really good football teams, and the Steelers and the Eagles. Two decently close games. Maybe the Eagles game not as close to the Steelers game, but they go into a stretch of football games where they should win against the Cowboys, Titans, and Saints before ending the season with the Eagles, Falcons, and Cowboys. So a good amount of winnable games in there. They're not better than the Eagles is what we found out this past week, and we all kind of knew that, but it got confirmed on Thursday night. Number six.
At six, I got the Ravens. I'm going to drop them down only one spot. Big slip up, though, against Pittsburgh. Justin Tucker missing those kicks is going to, unfortunately, make that division an uphill battle to grab this year. But I think there's plenty more in the tank. They're a top six team, and it seems like the top six are the ones we know the most about right now.
Yeah. Number six for me is also where I have the Ravens. They moved down one spot for me. The game against the Steelers was tough. When it comes down to Justin Tucker missing kicks, it's not something that you expect to lose on. But he's been kind of shaky this year, so maybe their reliance on him is going down a little bit. But these next six games in their schedule, Chargers, Eagles, I mean, Giants is a pretty easy one, but Steelers, Texans, and then the Browns, who they've already lost to, like, there's some decently tough games in there. I think the Ravens should be fine. I think we all kind of have the consensus that they are, you know, who they say they are when it comes to being one of the better teams in the league. But expected them to win that game against the Steelers, and they didn't. And that's saying something. And they have to move down in the rankings for that. Number five.
At five, I got the Steelers. They're moving up from the eight spot. They're 8-2 now after completely shutting down Baltimore on Sunday for five wins in a row. Nobody can stop George Pickens. Russ looks pretty good so far. And so far, so good for Mike Tomlin, too. At Cleveland, at Cincinnati coming up. It looks scary, but it's also a chance to clinch that division much earlier than anyone thought they could.
Yeah. I also have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the number five spot. They move up two for me. This team, they look legit, man, and I don't know about them taking down Kansas City or something like that. They play on Christmas, which will be pretty fun to watch, a Wednesday Christmas game, but I mean, they look like a Super Bowl contender, especially with how good their defense is, and now that their offense has started to take shape against or with Russell Wilson. I know they didn't score a touchdown against the Ravens. Chris Boswell kicked six field goals and a crazy day for him, but this Steelers team looks like it could legitimately be there in the AFC championship game or something like that. Number four.
At number four, the Eagles will be dropping one spot, but it is six wins in a row. No one can stop that running game with Hurts and Barkley. There's a couple of big tests coming up at the Rams, at Baltimore. It was more about what happened in the AFC this week that dropped them here, not necessarily their play.
I have the Eagles in the number four spot as well, too. They don't move at all for me, so they stay in the same spot as before. Like you said, six wins in a row, six good wins in a row. I think we're starting to see more of that 2022 dominant Eagles team. A good couple of games in their future. They have Sunday Night Football Sunday Night Football against the Rams this week, I want to say. And then they play the Ravens the week after that. So a fun couple of games there. That Ravens game is something that I would circle because it's a good test for both teams. Two of the better teams that are maybe not quite the top tier contenders yet. Next up, number three.
Number three, formerly number one, the Kansas City Chiefs. I guess they're human, Kyle. Luckily for them, Carolina and Las Vegas are coming up. So they may shoot themselves back up to number one the next time we do this. But for now, it really felt good not just to drop them to two, but to three because of the team they lost to, who we'll talk about in a second here.
Even though Buffalo beat Kansas City, I still have Buffalo below Kansas City. Buffalo does not move in my rankings. They stay at number three. And this is just me trusting Kansas City and what they've done in years past. It feels like every single year these two teams play and Buffalo beats them in the regular season. And then once it comes to the playoffs, they can't do it. And until that changes or until the Chiefs, you know, lose to the Panthers or something like that, then I can't put the Bills ahead of the Chiefs still. So It was a great win. It's a win that, they needed to get, because if they lost that game, it would have been, oh shit, we're not as good as the Chiefs again. But they got a fun schedule as well, too. Going into their bye right now, but coming out of it, they have the Niners and the Lions in a couple of their next few games, which will be fun to see. But definitely a huge win that they needed to get against the Chiefs on Sunday. Number two.
Yeah, number two is Buffalo. You don't get the opportunity very much to not only drop Kansas City from the top overall spot, but the top spot in the conference. Buffalo doesn't lose at home, not even against the defending champs. The big reason is this could be massive for tiebreakers. If Buffalo can host that game again, that could change things. You never know. It's really tough to play in the Northeast, especially in January. I guess it's more of a hopeful thinking than actually looking at the X's and O's here. Buffalo at the two.
I have Kansas City at the two spot. The move down one spot for me, of course. This is the third straight game where they kind of just let teams into it. The game against the Buccaneers, that the Buccaneers were severely like undermanned, was a game that they went to overtime with and, you know, had to win late for that. The Broncos game, you could very easily say that they should have lost that game. Was it for that blocked field goal? And then the Bills game, they lose, of course, and they've been kind of just letting teams play with them, which is kind of weird for a Chiefs team. Usually at this point in the season, we would have seen them blow a team out by like 30 or 40 points. They haven't done that yet this year. Maybe they do that this week against the Panthers and Bryce Young, and maybe they do it the next week after that against the Raiders. But as of right now, I mean, I'm not concerned or anything like that, but it is kind of worrisome that they have this inability to just put teams away early and not have to do it, you know, in overtime or in the fourth quarter. Number one spot. Who would have thought at, you know, 10 years ago that we're putting the Lions number one?
Finally, a new challenger for the top spot, right? There's some big injuries on this defense that might impact the Super Bowl run. But until then, they've really figured out how to dominate the regular season. They've got it all figured out right now. Just a well-oiled machine, like we used to talk about with San Francisco. And just to top it off, I saw this picture on Twitter. It was this fantasy football league where everyone chose one NFL team, and they got all the players. The Detroit team scored about 240 fantasy points this week.
I believe it. That's crazy. Yeah, number one is going to be Detroit, of course. They feel like they're immune to trap games right now. And maybe I say that and they lose the Colts this week or something like that. But
not gonna
this happen. Feels like one of the better teams that we've seen in our lifetime. They lost against the Buccaneers in week two. Seems so like foreign right now on like how they could lose a game. Especially to the Buccaneers, who we don't have in our top 15s right now. But this team looks unstoppable. Even in a game that Jared Goff threw five interceptions, they still find a way to win. And that's something that kind of just speaks to the resilience. And we can win a game when our quarterback throws five interceptions. What are we going to do in a game that he doesn't throw five interceptions? And, you know, 99% of the time he doesn't. And feels like 90% of the time he has like one or two incompletions. Their offense is about as perfect as it can be. Their defense is really underrated in my opinion as well too. This Detroit Lions team is the best team in football right now, and I really don't think it's debatable. They look so damn good, and I mean, I'm excited to watch them play every single week I get the chance to.
Thank you, St. Brown, for another fantasy win.
Moving on, though, to our awards. We have the typical awards, MVP, Opoy, Depoy, O'Roy, D-Roy, Comeback Player of the Year, and Coach of the Year. So I guess the classic, what is that, seven? Yeah, seven.
Yep.
We'll start it off with the MVP. Who did you choose for your most valuable player in the NFL so far, Skyler?
I still have Josh Allen. 23 total touchdowns to five interceptions, and he's got one of the worst Bills supporting casts. At 9-2, beating Kansas City. I know that Burrow has more yards, but there's no way he's more valuable than Josh Allen.
I think Josh Allen's a very close second, is what I had. And the guy that I had ahead of him is a guy that has beaten him this year, and that's Lamar Jackson. What he's done this year has been remarkable. Second in the league in yards, has 25 touchdowns, only three interceptions. Lamar obviously is a great runner as well too, but we're seeing the passing side of him being as good as it's ever been in his career. And I think Lamar Jackson is well on his way to his third NFL MVP.
Yeah. You know, before we move on, we've talked about it before. This is basically the closest we've gotten to Steve Young. So, you know, when I pick Josh Allen, it's not because I don't think Lamar can win it. Obviously, he's won two already.
Yeah. On to offensive player of the year.
Henry and Barkley are going to be in the top three all season long, but I'm going to flip my pick here to the Bengals duo, Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow. How this award is usually, it would be Jamar Chase, but I wanted to mention them both because they should be acknowledged. And maybe not for MVP, but this is a perfect way to acknowledge them. Jamar Chase has got 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns already, thanks to Joe Burrow being so unstoppable. So I included both.
Yeah, I think we're in a weird spot this year where we're not going to see, you know, one of those ridiculous seasons that we've kind of been accustomed to over the past few years.
Like
we're probably not going to see a Tyreek season or a Cooper Kupp season or anything like that. But what Jamar Chase has done, especially with the last, like, I mean, the 2 weeks specifically, but just for the majority of the season to be over 1,000 yards, have 12 touchdowns, it's pretty crazy. With that being said, there is two running backs I do think definitely will get votes when it comes down to it. If the season were to end today, Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley. I do have Saquon second. Maybe that's just me being biased. But I think what he's able to do is it's pretty crazy. So I have not as close as the Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson race, but still a close second in Saquon Barkley. Defensive player of the year, Skyler. There's some crazy candidates in this one. Maybe we didn't expect to see here or not. Who did you choose?
There are some crazy candidates, but I'm going to take the boring pick because I want to get some of these right at least. So I'm going with TJ Watt. We feel like we say this all the time, but he's probably got the highest defensive run saved if we're talking baseball. Only 7.5 sacks, but 10 TFLs, good in the run game. 3 more deflections, good in the pass game. 4 strip sacks, 2 he got himself. He just completely takes over the game like he's got his X factor on.
This is not a guy I ever expected to put at the defensive player of the year, but it's a guy, a name that we've loved for a few years now, and that's Andrew Van Ginkel. What he's doing in Minnesota this year is like ridiculous numbers. If TJ Watt was having these numbers, it'd be like, okay, give him the DPOY right now. But since Andrew Van Ginkel isn't as well known, I think it's probably why we're not seeing, you know, all these people say, you know, give him the DPOY or something like that. But he's got 8 sacks, which is tied for 5th in the NFL. He's got 13 tackles for loss, which is 1st in the NFL. He's got 3 pass deflections, 2 interceptions, 2 defensive touchdowns, a forced fumble in there as well, too. He's all over the field. What he's doing this year in Minnesota is pretty crazy. We always knew he's a playmaker. We saw it in Miami where he had the ability to score touchdowns for them and you know, get some picks and force fumbles and whatnot. But what he's doing this year in Minnesota is just straight up ridiculous. So Andrew Van Ginkel, deep boy.
It's like he switched bodies with Fred Warner.
Yeah. He's Jesus, man. He's Jesus. He's got the hair. Moving on to offensive rookie of the year. A fun one here.
Yeah. I think we might be down, unfortunately for you, to the two quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, but we got to shout out Brock Bowers. He's going to break rookie records. We got to shout out Brian Thomas Jr. because Jacksonville might be 0-17 without him. But yeah, I think it's Jaden Daniels by a decent margin right now. Nearly 70% completion percentage, only 3 picks. He's one of the most accurate passers in the league, and he's only played 12 games? 11 games.
I've seen a quarterback steal a Raider non-quarterback rookie offensive rookie of the year once before. I saw it when Kyler stole it from Josh Jacobs, and unfortunately we're going to see it again this year. So I did have to give Brock my flowers and put him as my overall right now. 70 receptions is crazy. He's on pace to shatter the rookie receptions record, which I think is like 104 by Puka. He's on pace for 120 right now. So he's way above that. The yards, he should get to about 1,200 yards is what the projection is. And, you know, 5 or 6 touchdowns, I assume maybe the touchdowns might thick up over the past few weeks or over the next few weeks as they have in the past few weeks for him. He's just so good, and he does everything so perfectly as a tight end. It's not something that you see too often. And I think it's pretty clear to say, and you know, once we go into these next few years, that he is going to be the premier tight end in the league. There isn't going to be anyone close to him. And he's going to have that like Travis Kelce type reign over the tight end position, hopefully the next, you know, 10 years, because he is still only 21 years old. Defensive rookie of the year is always interesting, especially when we didn't get a defensive player picked in the top 15 or whatever it was, picks in the draft this past year. So who'd you choose as your defensive rookie of the year?
This one was really weird. Just to let you know, I did finally switch it off of Leiatu Latu, but it's not anyone we've talked about yet today. I'm going to go with Quinyon Mitchell of the Eagles. We don't usually get a lot of shutdown corners in the first round every year, but it's starting to become a little more common. We kind of know how to look at these guys, even the ones who don't get a lot of picks, because he doesn't right now. But here's the thing. A lot of my friends were scared off because he comes from Toledo. He's been rapidly improving. And, you know, so have Verse and Latu and Cam Kitchens. But the numbers tell us that Quinyon Mitchell has been slowing down the number one receiver from the jump. So I'm going to take a risk.
Yeah, there's some interesting choices on here. I originally had Cam Kitchens picked, but I do think I want to go with an undrafted rookie, which would be pretty cool. I went with Jalen McCollough, who is a DB for the Los Angeles Rams. He's got four picks, a touchdown this year. He's been a playmaker. And I don't know if an undrafted rookie has ever won this award. I think that'd be something really cool to see. And with it being so contested with a few guys, you know, making their case, there's probably six or seven guys that you could really make a case for. I think he'd be a cool one considering what he's done this year for the Rams. But with the Rams' ability to get like young defensive playmakers for the past 2 years, whether it's all the linemen they drafted last year or the DBs that they got this year, drafted or not, it's pretty cool.
It saved a lot of guys' careers. They should be tanking right now.
Yeah. And saved a lot of money as well, too, with that. Not in a few years, though. They're going to have to pay all those guys. Anyways, moving on to Comeback Player of the Year. Always a fun award. Usually it's like a write-in at this point. Like, you kind of already know who it is. But this year, it might be a bit different.
Yeah, I've recently found out Sam Darnold is not eligible, even though coming back from the mono. I've heard from him going on some podcasts, it was just a brutal situation for him. And I know I'm giving him, you know, my tea right now because I can't vote for him. But yeah, wearing a 50-pound brace on your back for 2 years and coming back and playing this well, shout out to him. But I'm going to go with J.K. Dobbins because he suffered basically every major injury in the book. And right now he's second in the AFC in rushing yards. 5 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns. A lot of those big-time runs, I think it's a run over 20 yards with a couple broken tackles is how they classify it. But big-time runs for a guy on basically a minimum contract, shout out to J.K. Dobbins, man.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for Joe Burrow with the injury that he suffered last year to his wrist and his hand. That the stuff that he's done this year has been pretty remarkable, even with him kind of still playing through a little bit of injury that we've seen earlier in the season, maybe not as much these past few weeks. But how can it not be J.K. Dobbins? What he's gone through, obviously a more significant injury, multiple injuries, having to go to a new team, everything that he's endured to be as good as he's been this year is pretty remarkable. I was a guy who thought about trading for him in fantasy, but I held off of him because I thought he was going to get hurt. And for him to be healthy through this many weeks in the season is really cool to see. So J.K. Dobbins, comeback player of the year. If he stays healthy and plays this way the rest of the season, he should be the guy that gets this. Coach of the year.
There's a pretty good case for Jonathan Gannon. Arizona looks pretty good at top of the NFC West, but I think the odds makers got this one right with Mike Tomlin. They're 8-2. With quarterback controversy, that he's played out perfectly. This could have gone so wrong, and he plays his cards perfect most times.
This might be a unique pick, considering how his team's been the past few years and kind of the reputation on them. But I did want to go with Dan Campbell still as my coach of the year pick. What he's done this year into turning this team into like the best team in football I mean, he's got to get it, in my opinion. Like, I know there's a lot of really good stories, and I know Tomlin's been cool, and, you know, the Cardinals getting to their spot has been cool, and even some other teams, maybe Dan Quinn as well, too, you could say deserve it. But Dan Campbell making this team, the Lions, the best team in the National Football League, it's not something that I've seen in my lifetime. It's not something my dad's seen in his lifetime, and it's never something that my grandpa saw in his lifetime either. He's done to the city, it is pretty damn cool to see, and it's impossible to not root for them, in my opinion. Unless you're going against them directly, of course, and it's pretty tough to root for them. But moving on to our second half and some college football stuff.
Yeah, some college football talk. Little week 13 preview. We kick it off 9 a.m. with one of the biggest games of the season. That's 10-0 Indiana at 9-1 Ohio State. That's a 5-2. The winner's going to get Oregon at Lucas Oil Stadium in a few weeks. And the winner of that game will get the first round bye. OSU, 14-point favorite. But I wouldn't expect this one to get out of hand until the second half, probably. I'm really hoping it's a good game. But just in case it is a blowout, a little trap game in the SEC. 8-2 Ole Miss is going to the swamp against DJ Lagway, who just ended LSU's season. So maybe he could do it back-to-back weeks. Something to watch. At noon, we got the biggest matchup of the Big 12. It's BYU at the newly ranked Arizona State in the desert. DJ's going to be there. The winner gets their shot at Colorado for a playoff spot. So super excited for those guys. They've been really bad outside of a couple years with Herm Edwards and AP and Jaden Daniels. At 4 o'clock that day, it's going to be one of the ones we've been waiting for a long time. It's undefeated Army at Notre Dame. The way things have been going for the Big 12, there's a universe where Army could get into the playoff, but they would, of course, need to get that upset at Yankee Stadium. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be watching. Come on, Bryson Daly, put him on your back one more time, man. And then 7:30, the West Coasters get an interesting matchup at 7:30. It's now a Big Ten one, but we've seen it many times. It's 5-5 USC at 4-6 UCLA, mostly playing for pride, but it's a matchup we're familiar with. So I'm sure we'll have it on the background. That's the preview. Week 13, we're getting down to business.
A lot of, I'd say, background games this week, but also definitely a few marquee for us as well, too. The Indiana-Ohio State game obviously has a ton of big implications. It would have been cool if that was a night game, but 9 a.m. I'm cool with as well, too. I'm used to waking up 9 a.m. and watching, you know, a college football game on Saturday. It's usually pretty fun to do. But that Army-Notre Dame game, I'm going to be glued to, man. I know the Army football isn't, you know, probably the most flashy, the most sexy type of football to watch, but for my, you know, discourse around them this year, I'd need them to win this game. And if they were to beat the number 6 team in the nation in Notre Dame, that would mean something. That would get people to open their eyes. And especially with, you know, the ability now to potentially even have a second Group of 5 team in the playoff, especially if they go undefeated, it'd be so cool to see Army get in. And it'd be something America would want to see, because I think there's a good majority of people that don't like Notre Dame, and I'm included in that.
I think if Ole Miss and Tennessee both lose, they got a shot. I think that's how it goes. So rooting for a little SEC downfall for the next couple of weeks. It's I got no problem with that.
who wouldn't like an SEC downfall? Yeah. For real?
The last thing I got for you, I didn't end up doing a mock draft because things even changed this morning after some tiebreakers. So I feel like we should just go through what the top 10 on Tankathon looks like right now and see who needs a quarterback. Seems like the biggest thing right now. Sitting at the top right now, we still have Jacksonville, 2-9. It's been a disaster. Everybody's hurt. Terrible. Perfect candidate for Travis Hunter, who I know we're getting off topic here already, so I'm sorry, but been hearing teams are going to look primarily corner, at least now, since he's so special. Charles Woodson type ball ability. So we'll see what happens there. At number 2, Tennessee Titans. I think this is definitely a prime candidate to trade back, especially if they're in the Sam Darnold market. But 2-A quarterback could be something here. We just don't know. Will Levis is back. They're going to let him play out the season. We'll figure it out. At number 3, it's the Cleveland Browns, also 2-8 for the next couple teams here. it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the coach, Stefanski. He obviously wants to go into the future pretending like Watson isn't even there. But if the owner says, no, we have to give him another shot, they're not going to be able to afford to draft a quarterback. It's just too much money. So that could be another team that takes defense or trades back. Now we get into the two prime candidates for quarterback. We'll start off with the New York Giants, who ended up jumping your Raiders in the tiebreaker after the Cowboys lost last night. They tried to get a bunch of different quarterbacks last year. Didn't work out. Similar with you guys. If I had to guess right now, this would be my Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders spot. I probably have Cam Ward above because he could play right away. I don't know. If you need a quarterback, you take one, right? There's not the biggest difference in the world between those guys. Number six, it's the Patriots. They obviously don't need a quarterback, so they're going to be happy with whichever superstar falls to them after all the drama. The Jets at seven, unfortunately, it's going to be a hard reset with the new GM and coach. That could definitely mean quarterback. That could mean trading up, could be trading down. Just please don't fuck this up again. Just keep us even. Don't send us back 5 years like the other guys. At eight, it's Carolina. It's another situation with Tennessee, right? Bryce Young is getting another shot, so we don't know for sure. If I had to bet, I would say they don't take a quarterback. At number nine, it's the Cowboys. They've chalked it up. The whole roster is basically CeeDee Lamb, Cooper Rush, and a bunch of undrafted free agents right now who weigh 160 pounds. I don't know if you saw some of those guys just getting flattened out there at receiver, but that's not a pro team. They're going to be tanking for, I don't even know, dude. If you get in the top five, you can't take Ashton Jeanty that high, right? Maybe O-line? I don't know.
Trade Beck. Who knows?
Yeah. Carson Beck. Trade Beck. Number 10, New Orleans Saints, doesn't get any easier for them. I would imagine they go defense this year, but when you have a veteran quarterback, things change really quickly. So that's the top 10. A bunch of teams need quarterback, but who's going to pull the trigger on a class that hasn't really proven anything yet? We will see.
Yeah, it's a weird spot. I think there's a few trade back candidates. I think we also kind of say this a lot around this time of the season before we really get the full story of the season, of course. With the Titans, I think if they stay in two, but they like Will Levis, they'd be in a position to trade back. But I think if they're gonna like Will Levis, that means he's gonna win some games.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't be at two. It's an interesting spot there though. With the Browns, they're kind of more of a set in stone team. I think they're gonna be bad, but a potential to probably not take quarterback with their money situation with Deshaun Watson. So maybe they're a prime team to trade back. I'm looking at all this because I want the Raiders to take quarterback. Yeah. And if we don't somehow get a top two or three pick, then I think it's going to be, on the outside looking in for something like that. But if we're picking at five, we got to get Shedeur or Cam Ward. And I want Shedeur. That's who I want. So hopefully it comes true this year. I feel like this is the third year of me saying I want us to draft a quarterback. 2 years ago was Anthony Richardson. Hey, it's not looking as bad now after this past week.
Yeah.
I also wanted Will Levis as well, too. That's maybe not looking as good. Last year I wanted Jaden Daniels. That's obviously we didn't get him.
So did the Giants.
Good. This year I want Shedeur. So we'll see how that obviously plays out. Got a long ways to go, though, and everything's going to change. We even saw the Giants and the Raiders picks change last night on a strength of schedule thing. So that's how crazy it is right now. Raiders are at four, and now they're at five. But
can't believe this, man. What a disaster.
Yeah.
Hey, but one thing I'll tell you, though, I don't think AP is going anywhere. I've heard some rumors a little bit from Alex too. They're going to give him a couple years to get that defense ready.
We shall see. Because I'm curious about the offensive side of that. There's an offensive coordinator spot that probably will be needed to be filled this year.
Aaron Rodgers?
He's got fuck off. He's got this kind of old style bit to him, but I'd really like us to go poach the Lions quarterback coach or something like that to take our offensive coordinator spot. Not a guy you probably have for 1 or 2 years before he goes and coaches.
Okay.
The Rams or something like that when McVay retires.
Yeah.
Joe Brady. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But that's kind of my 2 cents on that right now.
Okay.
Moving into our layups bowl predictions, another rough week for us. One out of four. Let's see, what was last week? Last week was one out of four. So unfortunately, back-to-back losing weeks for us. But the pick that we did get right was my layup. I had Detroit minus 13 versus Jacksonville. They got a lot more than, you know, minus 13 to win that game. Skyler had Wazoo minus 12 and a half versus UNM. What it was?
New Mexico. They lost 41-38 to New Mexico. Thanks, guys.
That's tough. This week, though, I have Detroit again, minus 7.5 versus Indianapolis. I said earlier that this team feels like it's trap game proof. We'll see if they are against Anthony Richardson and the Colts.
I'm going to stick with some college picks, even though the Wazoo didn't work for me. Let's go with Deion's boys. Colorado, minus 2.5 at Kansas. It's a little closer because Kansas played very well against BYU. I don't think Colorado is going to make the same mistakes, though.
Last week, bold prediction, I had Cincinnati moneyline versus the Chargers on Sunday Night Football. You could make a case that that probably should have hit. Yeah. Thank you, Evan McPherson, for it not hitting. Skyler had Kansas City plus 115 at Buffalo. That, of course, did not hit. We've talked about it quite a bit already. This week, I have San Francisco moneyline against the Green Bay Packers. This is a team that Niners usually do pretty well against, whether it's Jordan Love or Aaron Rodgers or whoever they're playing. But I think this could be a get-right game for the Niners, especially if Kittle plays.
Yeah, definitely on my list of possible ones. I'll definitely be picking San Francisco on our picks, but taken. So I'm going to stick in the Big 12. I feel like the Big 12 has been so chaotic. I've been able to kind of figure out what's going to happen based off of the history. So I'm going to take Cincinnati plus 260 at Kansas State. Kansas State got completely embarrassed at home against Arizona State. They only scored 14 points against not a great defense. So we'll say Cincinnati has a good week, beats them by three.
That's going to do it, though, for episode 219, just over an hour, maybe an hour 15 on this one.
Yeah.
So good episode here. Next week, 220. Maybe some MLB stuff happens, hopefully. We haven't seen really too many dominoes fall yet, but those usually tend to take a while, and once they do start falling, they start falling pretty rapidly. So hopefully that happens within the next week or so. NFL will always be good. We got that going on, and college football as well too. Who's your 12th next week should be pretty fun. So
who's your 12th?
Yeah, any closing remarks?
Man, shout out BYU for finally getting that first round bye projection. It's awesome. And you know, we're 1 week closer to the NFL draft, 1 week closer to the winter meetings. There's always stuff to talk about. So even when your team's getting popped every week, we're going to talk about you.
Yep.
All right. 220 next week. I'll see you next week, Kyle.
See you there.